Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. McAdams?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
We're going to be talking about medicine a little bit today and vaccination.
You know
so
about that, don't
you? We want to keep people happy and well.
That's right.
So I want to deal a little bit today with the issue of compulsory vaccinations. That's a big issue. You know, a lot of supporters we have are very attuned to this. And I remember in the campaign, this was a big issue, about being forced to it. And the issue was both medical and government force. Do we need all these vaccinations for our kids? Are they dangerous? Do they cause problems? And the other thing was, who makes these decisions? Is it the government that makes these decisions? Or is this an issue of liberty? And most people thought it was an issue of liberty. Sort of reminds me of what came up in the campaigns when we talked about the right for people to drink raw milk.
Yeah,
Oh, well, it's for your safety and we have to take care of you and tell you what you put in your body and this sort of thing. At the same time, it was the government that was going to tell you, you can't do this. Well, vaccinations are something like that, too, because they're overregulated now and people are upset about what we can put into our bodies. In this case, it's the parents who are responsible for small children making decisions. And obviously in a free society, a decent moral society, we still believe that the state does not own the children and that the parents should. At least they get the benefit of the doubt, unless there's some very unusual thing. But parents, make the decision. But there was a doctor out in California, in Orange County, a pediatrician, that thought differently. He thought, well, the parents ought to have a say. You don't do things like this unless, the parents agree. But that contradicts current medicine, especially in California, because their rules are very strict. You don't do anything, except what we tell you you will have to do in the practice of medicine. So governments have become more involved in the practice of medicine. And that's essentially was one of my biggest gripes about Obamacare. Government was dictating exactly what you could do or couldn't do. And that led to a lot of conflict. But this pediatrician went ahead, I think it was happened, 2014. Mm-hmm. And he wrote his note. You have to write to excuse him and tell him this, I guess it goes to the schools. This child is excused from taking these vaccinations. And this raised an outcry. He ended up going before, the medical society and threatened with a whole lot. But it's also an ordeal with the parents. And this parent obviously went through some ordeal as well.
Yeah, indeed. And his name is Dr. Bob Sears. And he's not against vaccines at all. He has some ideas about the scheduling, about how maybe the scheduling of vaccines should be altered, because some people complain about front-loading a lot of vaccines into a young child at once. He has some questions. Of course, the science is always settled is really the answer. But, vaccines are medical treatments, and as I understand, medical treatments should be voluntary. But here's the point of the timeline. Okay, a woman with a two-year-old child tells her doctor that the son had a negative reaction to a vaccine. He had an adverse reaction to a vaccine. The judge was about to rule that she had to start getting him the vaccines again. She was concerned for her child who'd already had, in what she said, a bad reaction. She needed a doctor's letter quickly because the court was about to rule that you have to start injecting your kid. So Dr. Sears worked based on the mother's description of what happened to the child, the adverse reaction. He wrote up a note exempting the child. He said it would have taken too long to get the required full medical history to do the exemption. And in fact, of course, he was right, because it took over a year to get that full history. So it would have been moot. So he was put on probation, medical probation, for 35 months. And his reaction was, shouldn't doctors listen to the parents?
Oh, that's an old-fashioned idea. But, when I looked in detail about his penalties, this went through and he was under the gun. It was either accept what they presented to him or lose his license.
Yeah.
You're going to lose your license. But he essentially lost his right to practice medicine in a decent way and respect the doctor-patient relationship. And of course, government medicine does that, and Obamacare was atrocious in ruining this doctor-patient relationship. But like you said, he was going to be under strict probation for 35 months. He was threatened, if you don't do it, you're going to lose your license. But then he had to go 40 hours of medical education per year. And this would include ethics training. And, you know, for us to renew our license, we have to have an hour, I think, a year on ethics. But believe me, it has nothing to do with ethics. It has to do with filling out government forms and doing insurance and all kinds of things. But in the conventional wisdom, has nothing to do with ethics. But he was mandated to do more of that. He was also to be monitored. Everything he did, he had to be monitored by another MD. Here he is. He's out. He's a professional. He's been doing this. But he couldn't do anything without another doctor knowing exactly what he was doing. And then he had to notify anybody he came in contact with, another clinic or another hospital or anything. They had to have, you know, written notification that, you know, he's under probation. And he also was unable to supervise a nurse's or a doctor's assistants. Mm. So, you know, that is what's done commonly now, but he would be denied this. So it was pretty tough. So he had to have strong convictions, because I'm sure he knew what was coming. And but this is something that, you know, we have heard politically for a long time, and parents feel very strongly about it. But, you know, for us who believe in liberty, it's not difficult. You know, what you put in your body is your business, you know, whether it's a dangerous substance or not a dangerous substance. And it's simply that easy. But, no, when you get the people involved, well, you've got to protect the community, and they get into all sorts of things. If you don't have these inoculations, you're going to spread all these kind of diseases. Mm-hmm. Of course, the people who want the inoculations can. But like you already mentioned, he wasn't even asking to no inoculation. He was just saying, under certain circumstances, if there's a controversy, the parents have a right to make the decision. It's not the iron fist of the government coming down and say, you will do this, because I think the doctors are absolutely foolish to deny that there aren't complications, you know, with these inoculations. We've heard too many cases, but quite frankly, this is a deep conspiracy theory. Our conspiracy theory is it has something to do with who sells these things. And, you know, it's really, really pumped up that they have to have these things. You can't go to school, can't do anything, can't get jobs.
Yeah.
And there's one group that does it, and that is the drug companies are strongly behind this. And then the politicians are bought, and they go along with it as well. But the other thing is you know, the different states deal with this, but there's a lot of federal pressure too.
And it sounds like really what they're trying to do is destroy his reputation, you know, to make him, to put a stigma on him so no one wants to go to him, really to destroy everything about him. It really, you know, when you're reading about these requirements, it sounds like he's being sent to a Soviet re-education camp, you know.
Right.
In the Soviet Union, if you expressed wrong political ideas, you were sent to be re-educated. And here's a quote from what they said. He must submit to, quote, additional education in areas where his practice is deficient. You know, so it literally is a re-education camp. And as we said, he's not out there practicing voodoo. He simply says that we need to look at the schedule, perhaps, and listen to the parents.
And this idea that there's something sacred about the medical profession knowing absolutely what's right. There's been too many things in medicine in my lifetime there where the attitude has changed a whole lot. And, you know, in this country, not too long ago, in OB, the practice was if you delivered a baby, you had to stay in bed for 2 weeks. Mm. Worst thing in the world you can do for a woman, you want to get them up and move them around so they don't have stasis and blood clots and all this thing. And they did that for years. And it was the wrong thing. So many times it's lay people that come up with these ideas or necessity. I got to get out of bed. I got to go to these things. Finally figured out it wasn't doing any good. But this whole idea that they say, well, if a group of doctors say such a thing, it's absolutely true and there's no choices. But people ought to have the right to make some of these choices. and that's called freedom. But just too often, this is not honored and respected. But, you know, in Dr. Sears' book, he was very clear on the thing that you mentioned there, that he wanted to adapt the rules to more what the Center for Disease Control advised. And that is, space them a little bit, have a little bit of better schedule, and instead of having these cocktails. And that was one of his big pitches. That makes a lot of sense to me. It makes a lot of sense to a lot of doctors, and it makes a lot of sense to parents, because they have seen some of their kids, you know, react to these inoculations. But it's just common sense that you would do this, and yet that's the way it is. It's still done that way, and a lot of people, you know, get pretty ill over these, because sometimes they can become life-threatening, and some people end up with paralysis and different things, unusual reactions. Most of the time, not the case. But my position is probably close to his. I believe inoculations. I think that I took the inoculation for polio, let me tell you, because that was a bad time in the 50s with polio.
Yeah.
But the thing is, who makes these decisions? Are the politicians all wise? Are the doctors all wise? Are parents to be ignored? So this is a very important issue.
You know, it's really fascinating what you said earlier, because I bet when they had the women in bed for 2 weeks, the science was settled. You know, you got to stay in bed. And then all of a sudden, guess what? The science isn't so settled. You got to get up and move around.
Right.
But, you know, you talk about governments and you talk about parents and doctors. But there's another group that I think we should pay a little bit of attention to. And this is NGOs and pressure groups. And they never take, for example, Every Child by Two is a vaccine advocacy nonprofit organization, and they took this opportunity to absolutely demonize Dr. Sears. They said Dr. Sears' promotion of alternative vaccine schedule has helped perpetuate the myth that vaccines are not safe for children. That is shameful. Right. And they're encouraging more punishment, more punishment. These are unelected people. These are people that are, who knows who they're paid by, who knows where the donors are, but they're trying to destroy the reputation.
You know, this idea of requiring authority from either the individual getting the medication or the shot, because we sign permission, adults are generally signing permission, but for children, the parents are supposed to sign. For years, and it still exists this way, is if you go to the emergency room and you have a small child or a child of yours, and even if it's a small little laceration or anything, the doctor doesn't proceed to make the suturing. They call the parents, they might get permission on the phone, but you don't start giving it a numbing shot or anything, unless it's life-threatening or something. But they don't do the procedure until they get permission. Then I got to thinking, you know, when the rules change and the attitude change about abortion, you know, now, I'm sure this is still the case, if you have a sad situation where you have a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old that's pregnant, the permission doesn't come from the parents. Matter of fact, the state helps hide it from the parents. They do not need to be notified, and the 14-year-old can go in and get the abortion done. The permission comes from the government. Now you say, well, that's good. You know, it's going to save her life and her disgrace and, you know, all the arguments for it. But it also violates a basic principle of who's responsible for the child. And in that case, they would say, not the parents. And when you look at totalitarianism, you know, what they want to do is get control of the people very, very early.
And there's a lot of talk today about separating parents from children. I think there's a lot of validity to concerns about it. But is this not separating parents from children in a most fundamental way?
That's the truth. I don't know if you saw that story about, I think it was in Denmark. They were worried about the ghetto children they were coming in, but the rule would be after they're 1 year old that every child could be taken from the parents and have to spend 25 hours a week in a government facility to be really indoctrinated. And they could do that until they were age 6. Well, this, of course, was saying, well, we have to deal and we have to make them adapt to our culture. But politically is a very dangerous thing that the government can come in and say, they need this indoctrination 24 hours a week, and this will make them better obeying citizens like that. So it's this attitude. I think it's ownership is I think the big thing.
I mean, haven't we already gone through this with the Nazis and with the Soviets? The thing I was thinking about when I was reading this thing about this NGO is, what are they afraid of? Why are they afraid of someone like Dr. Sears saying, hey, let's take a look at the schedule. Maybe it can be tweaked a little bit. Maybe it can be improved. I mean, people that are, you know, this one-size-fits-all medicine we talked about, the whole point seems to be to silence critics, shut down discussion. What are they so afraid of? You know, there are people that support the idea of vaccines that nevertheless raise some legitimate concerns. For example, I was reading a piece in Common Dreams before we started the show, that the FDA has never studied the impacts on children's health of combining 50-plus vaccines into one. Seems like something that they might want to study. It doesn't make you a heretic for saying, hey, maybe look into it. The other issue we know is things like mercury and other neurotoxins that have been found in these vaccines. That's legitimate. Let's look at it. Can they be made safer? A lot of people, for religious reasons, are concerned about vaccines because they contain the cells of aborted fetuses. So there are plenty of things to worry about, but the main issue is private property. The ultimate private property is your ownership of yourself, your ownership of your body, the ownership of your life. And whether it's the draft, whether it's being sent off in wars, whether it's being forced to have psychiatric or medical treatments, these things are all the hallmarks of totalitarian, authoritarian societies, certainly not of a free society. And we have an obligation to resist to the extent that we can.
Daniel, I think you've made the very most important point, and that is ownership. Who owns our bodies? You know, we recognize in this country pretty well that intellectually and theologically, we're allowed to put into our minds and our soul what we want, and the government's not to dictate that to us. We don't want a theocracy. But when it comes to putting stuff into our bodies, the government has for a long time assumed that they have an absolute right and obligation to tell exactly what we can do, whether it's raw milk or inoculations or the food we eat and all of these things. They are very, very dictatorial about doing this. But you know, this is not brand new. I found one case where they claim that a lot of this sentiment comes from a case passed way back in 1905, and it was written up by Oliver Wendell Holmes, who turns out he's not my favorite Supreme Court justice. And they were the ones that wrote this law that said that the government does have this authority. And the words they used was, whatever is good for the common good, you go by what people generally believe to be important, but you don't deal with the facts. I mean, that was their whole notion. But back then, they were dealing with a vaccination case. And this was, I was surprised that they were doing it back then. But it's amazing. That particular law has been used and justified this movement for all these years. It's been changed, but it hasn't been eliminated, at least the sentiment. The whole thing is, this law was used to justify the use of eugenics. And there was another court case then, and they referred back to that. And Oliver Holmes was still the Supreme Court justice and justified eugenics. And they also, in this case, said, well, the reason why it's the public good and why we can do this, they use the issue of the draft, which you mentioned. You know, the draft is ownership of the body, as is the IRS and the ownership of all our income. So they said the draft was an indication that we can use your body, we can go over and endanger you. So you can take a little bit of risk if we tell you what you can, you know, what you can inject, you know, and we have to control. So once again, it's the respect for liberty, the understanding of liberty, just wanting to do good and being well motivated, because sometimes people feel, you know, they have to cave in because it sounds like it's pretty good. They fail to look at maybe there's some money behind this. And I don't think it's too cynical to believe that drug companies are very, very powerful. powerful, and they have a lot of influence in the practice of medicine. Way too many drugs. If it, anything I learned over the many years in medicine was there was way too much medication used, and it's always being promoted, and the salesmen come around, and they pump up the doctors to use and all kinds of things. So it's not been good. That doesn't say that medicine hasn't made great progress, because it has. It's been fantastic in many ways. But you have to look and find out who are writing the laws. If you look at some of the legislation that paying for this, you know, the FDA rules and regulations on which drugs get out to the market, you find out that the FDA and the collaboration with other physicians, it's very, very closely connected. So there's a lot of special interest on this. The only special interest we're talking about here today is liberty, picking and choosing who has the right to choose and who's responsible, and we should have a responsibility for our own body. As long as no injury is being done to other people, you ought to be able to decide what risk you want to take, and that, of course, is the essence of liberty, your willingness to have these choices and taking the risks and benefit from the rewards of the decisions you make. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.